Okay, we're beginning here on the third line down on the top of Chav Dalet Amud Aleph. Yatvei Rabbonon Komei D'Rav Papa. The Rabbonon was sitting before Rav Papa. V'kamrei Mishmei D'Shmuel. And they said over a memra on the name of Shmuel. Avel, Shishimei Shmita Tobi Me'evlo. An Avel who engages in Tashmisha Mita during his period of mourning. Chayav Mita. Obviously not a literal statement, but a statement that is very strong, taking a position against an Avel Shishimei Shmita Tobi Me'evlo. Amr Luhu, Rav Papa. Papa says back to them, first of all, Asuri Itmar. Let's talk about it. It's not that it's Chayam Mita, but rather that it is Asur. Umishmei de Rabbi Yochanan Itmar, and it's also in the name of Rabbi Yochanan and not in the name of Shmuel. Be'ishmieluchu Mishmei de Shmuel. This is what you heard, or you heard something in the name of Shmuel. Hachishmieluchu. This is what you heard. Amr Rav Tachlifa, Barav Yimei, Amr Shmuel, Avel Shlo Para. An avel who does not grow out his hair, let it become unkempt, and does not rent his garments, chayav mita. He is chayav mita. Why? Shenemar. Because it says by the Bnei Aaron, Roshechem al tifrau, ubigdichem lo tifromu, velo tamutu. This is an instruction to Aaron's sons. You may not do what normal avelim do, which is, you may not let your hair grow out and become unkempt. You may not rend your garments. And if you do this, v'lo tamuto, and you will not die. So now the Gemara says, aha, cher. The inference from this is someone else, shelo parav, shelo pireim, who didn't do these things, chayav mita. It's chayav mita. Right away, Tosafot points out that's not the pashtuta pasuk. The pashtuta pasuk is that this is directed at Bnei Aaron. Bnei Aaron, if you don't do what I'm telling you, meaning that if you do act like avilim, then you will die. So you may not act like an avel, and that's how you'll stay alive. The inference that someone else, which is true, the inference might be true, which is someone else should grow their hair out and should rend their garments, but that doesn't have anything to do with the lo yamutu aspect of it. The lo yamutu is directed at Bnei Aaron. The Tosafot says it's a drasha on the pasuk, but clearly the pashtuta pasuk does not read that way. But that's how Rav Papa says that we can explain that statement of Shmuel. Why would he ever say anything about Chayav Mita? Where does Chayav Mita come? It comes out of this pasuk about Priya and Prima that is associated with the Bnei Aaron. Nothing to do with Tashmisha Mita. Now, Amra Rafram Bar Papa, Tano Be'Avel Rabati. In Avel Rabati there is this Masechet Smachot, which we have is one of the minor Masechetot. Avel Asur L'Shamesh Mitato Bimei Evlo. An avel is not allowed to engage in tashmisha mita during his avelut. There was an incident where someone engaged in conjugal relations during his avelut. And his end was that corpse was thrown out and the pigs were running around with his corpse. Rashi over here suggests that gviato may not be gufo, which normally what it means, but gviato may be amato. When that mida connected mida, that they ripped off his member. But whatever it is, the punishment was severe for engaging in Tashmisha Mita during the period of Avelut. Now, Amar Shmuel, Pachas Chova Natar Rishut. These are acronyms, which the Gemara will explain now. Priyat Arosh, Chazarat Kera Leachurav, Skifat Amita Chova. These things are an obligation. Priyat Arosh, meaning leaving your head uncovered. Chazarat kera le'achurav, the tear, the rip that you make in your clothing, turning it behind you, turning it backwards. And skifat amita is putting the bed back in place. Instead of kfiat amita, putting skifat amita. Those are all obligations. Nilata sandal, tashmish amita, rechitzat yadayim raglayim, bechamin arvit reshut. Those are optional. So optional over here, nilata sandal wearing shoes, tashmish amita engaging in marital relations, and rechitzat yadayim v'raglayim b'chamin, washing yourself in hot water at night before Shabbat, those are all reshut, those are optional. What Shmuel is speaking about here is when avelut coincides with Shabbat. What are the dinim on Shabbat? We said here you're not allowed to have avelut b'farhesia. You're not allowed to have public avelut. You can only have avelut b'tzin'ah. So now, what Shmuel is describing over here are what are obligatory in terms of removing the practices of avelut, which are public, what are those items that you must do? And what are items are reshut, are optional, meaning that you can opt in, you can opt out, you can do as you please in those items. So here we have, first of all, pachaz is chovah, priyat rosh. Shmuel says you may not cover your head on Shabbat, because that's an indication of avilut. The rip, the tearing of your clothing, if you don't turn it behind so it's not visible, that also makes it obvious that you are practicing avilut. Same thing with kifat amita. Kfiat amita makes it obvious that you're practicing like an avil, therefore you zukef the mita. But nilata sandal, with regards to not wearing shoes, that's optional, because nilata sandal, there are other people who walk around without shoes on, irrespective of avilut. I mean, that not only are avilim not wearing shoes, there are other people not wearing shoes. So it's not automatically obvious that if you take off your shoes, you are an avil. Tashmisha mita is also something that is optional. Nobody knows whether a person is engaged in tashmisha mita or not, and therefore you have permission to engage in these items. Also, again, coming into Shabbat, bathing or washing oneself for the preparation of Shabbat, there again, it's not obvious that the person is not engaged in avilut. Rav amar, af priyat rosh rishut. Rav says also, covering one's head is also optional, meaning that you may cover your head going into Shabbat or on Shabbat, and that's not an indication of avilut. Ushmuel, maishna nilata sadal derishut. Why is wearing shoes optional? Delav kuliyama vide desaimi misanayu. Not everybody wears shoes. Since not everybody wears shoes, the removal of shoes is not an automatic indication of avilut. So just because you're not wearing shoes doesn't mean you are an avil. Wearing shoes doesn't mean you're not an avil, right? So the shoe issue is not automatic, or it's not a given just because you're not wearing shoes. I mean, today it might be a little different because people always wear shoes in general in public places. It's changed a little bit in the last number of years. It seems to be that there's been this retro move not to wear shoes in the younger generation. But in general, people do wear shoes, and therefore not wearing shoes is a strong indication of avilut, especially if you walked out in the public thoroughfares without shoes on. That would be the case. But in their day, since there were some people who didn't have shoes, there were people who walked around without shoes, wasn't automatically an indication of avilut. Priyata rosh namit. Love kuliyama avide de maglu reshayu. Not everybody uncovers their head. According to Rav, who says here that priyata rosh is reshut, he says that nilata sandal and priyata rosh have the same din. Nilata sandal, it's not automatically obvious that when you take off your shoes, you're an avel. So too, if you uncover your head or cover your head, it's not automatically indicative of the fact that you are an avel. Some people leave their heads uncovered. Some people keep their heads covered, and that's irrespective of whether you're an avel or not. So according to Rav, he says, I don't see any difference between priyata rosh and nilata sandal. So the Gemara's question is to Shmuel. Shmuel, why did you differentiate between priyata rosh and nilata sandal? Rav has a strong claim here that they're not automatically indicative of avilut, and there, Shmuel, why do you say that one may not cover their head on Shabbat of avilut? Gemara says, Shmuel etame. Shmuel is according to his own reasoning, which is the Amar Shmuel. This is very important. Kokera, sheinu bishat chimum enu kera. Any tearing, any rending of the garments that is not done at the moment of emotion, enu kera, it doesn't count as kriya. So here the Rishonim take up different approaches to dealing with this. We'll get to it in a little bit. I've mentioned before that the Raivud takes this the most literally and says that there's no kriya except at that the moment, the heat of the moment, that's only done as a kriya. Outside of that, kriya is meaningless. It's irrelevant. Then the second statement, which is relevant to us over here, is any wrapping that is not like the wrapping of the Arabs, that's not considered to be atifata rosh. So since the atifata rosh that is done here is in a specific manner that is, quote-unquote, unique to avilut, since that is the practice, then if you don't uncover your head, it'll be obvious that you are an avel. Because the way that you're covering your head makes it that you are for sure an avel. So according to Shmuel, since his definition of atifa is very particular, and you must practice it this way, otherwise you don't have atifa, that means that if you're doing it, you're clearly an avel. Because the only person who would be doing this was an avel. And because of that, he demands that you uncover your head. Rav, who doesn't have this threshold or standard of atifa, he says, put it on, take it off, whatever you want, because it's not obvious that you are an avel. Mechavi Rav Nachman. Rav Nachman is a Talmud of Shmuel, says, he points, what does that mean? That you have to do an atifak atifata yishmelim? So he pointed out, ad govi de dikno, until the height of the zakein, which is either his dimples, the way Rashi explains it, or maybe the bones, the cheekbones over here, that's what we're speaking about. From here comes out the halacha of atifata rosh. Now this halacha is very important. I'm gonna explain now, take some time to explain it, because it has ramifications, the halacha daily, and most people do it incorrectly. So I want to spend some time on this. The atifat harosh here that's being described is the necessity for atifat harosh v'avelut, and we know that there's atifat harosh with avelut, and also by the mitzora. The Gemara discussed this earlier, the parallels between mitzora and the avel, and we saw earlier in the Masechta that an avel is chayav in atifat harosh, and a mitzora is chayav in atifat harosh. Both of them are from Tzukim. The pasuk in mitzora, in Parashat Tazria, says there, va'al safam yateh, that he will cover over his safam, safam being his mustache, his lips, he'll cover them over, v'tameh tameh yikra, and he'll call out that he is a tameh. So there, by mitzora, an explicit statement that he must cover over his safam. In addition, by the avilut, by the practices of Yechezkel, in the psukim that say that he has to be henek dom, over there it says that he shall not cover his safa. He will not cover over his mouth, over his mustache, unlike what an avel should do. An avel should cover that over. So now, the description here is the description of Tivata Mishmelim, and it's brought down halacha, which is one must cover their face until their nose. That's what the way the halacha is brought down according to the poskim. What seems to have happened is that there was a misunderstanding of this, and a lot of that misunderstanding probably has to do with the location of the individuals who are speaking about it. Those that live in the Arab countries know exactly what the Gemara is speaking about here, Kiatifata Ishmaelim. The Gemara itself doesn't really define it. It gives here, Rav Nachman gives you some indication what it is, but Atifata Ishmaelim is clearly something they knew. It's a defined term. It's the way that the Arabs cover their heads. The Gemara doesn't go on to give a tremendous amount of explanation about that. And anybody who lives amongst the Arabs would know exactly what that means. Those that are living in Europe and far away from the areas where the Arabs cover their face, they likely do not understand what is being spoken about over here. And therefore, there is a difference of opinion that arises that has impact here, which is covering one's face until the nose. Which is that those poskim that live in the Arab countries generally seem to be speaking about covering one up to one's nose from the bottom up, from the chin up to the nose. On the other hand, those in the European countries seem to indicate or be speaking about covering one's head from the top, from their forehead down to their nose. Now, it has a big nafkamina. Where does this show up? In putting on one's talit. When it comes to putting on one's talit, a person says the bracha lehit ateif but tzitzit. That one is wrapped in the tzitzit. Which the Rishonim describe, if you say lehit ateif but tzitzit, the Beit Yosef brings this as well. That means that you require atzifa with the talit. And it's brought down in Shulchan Aruch as well. The one must be mit ateif in the tzitzit. It doesn't mean that you have to have your head covered all the time. Sometimes covered, sometimes uncovered. But when you put on the talit, you have to do atifat harosh at that point in time. So the common practice amongst many, and I did this many, many years ago, which is that they take the talit, they pull it over their head, they pull it over the top of their head, coming over the top of their head all the way down till it covers their face, they wrap themselves up, I mean, make bracha beforehand, they pull it over, wrap themselves up. You look in the pictures in the back of the Mishnah Berurah, I think Oz V'Hadar, they printed their pictures of somebody doing this, taking the talit after made the bracha, wrapping it around the top, covering their head down, covering until their nose. And if you read the Mishnah Berurah, that's what he says. He says you cover your face until it reaches the mouth, until you reach the mouth. And everybody understood that to mean you cover over from the top of your face. When I first put on my talit, that's how I learned to do it, so I put it on that way. But more than probably 20, 25 years ago, when I was learning in yeshiva, Masechet Menachot, we learned Masechet Menachot, and we dealt with the sugyot of tzitzit. I read a tshuva from Ravad Yosef. The tshuva is compelling beyond belief. I will try to send it out. But it basically says that it's completely incorrect to do it this way. And his basic point is that Atifata Yishmaelim, he quotes this, the Mund Kutcher also says the same thing, the Minchas Elozer says the same thing in his thing. When was the last time you saw an Arab walking around with his eyes covered? I mean, come on. Atifata Yishmaelim can't be that he's covering his eyes and bang, he can say you trip over stones, bang into walls. It makes no sense to cover over your eyes and walk around. That's not an atifata yishmelim. Atifata yishmelim. Walk outside today. You'll know that. Someone wears a kfiyah. They cover their face with their mouth up to their nose. That's atifat. They leave their eyes open. There's a slit for the eyes so that one can see where they're going. And therefore, Rav Avadia Yosef describes the way they put out a talit. And this thing is extremely compelling. So 20, 25 years ago, I changed the way I put on a talit. And I think that it's very hard to argue against this. It's almost pointless to argue against him because he's so right about this. And that is that when you put on your talit, you bring it over the top of your head, You actually roll it up till it's on your shoulders, and you take the right side and flip it over your left shoulder, and then the left side over your left shoulder as well. And what ends up happening is that your head is covered like a keffiyeh. You look like an Arab. Your mouth is covered up to your nose, your eyes are open, and the top of the talit is over your forehead, and you look like you're wearing a tifat ha'ishmaelim. It's funny, this summer it was discussion at our table, and then somebody said, yeah, when Abba puts on his talit, he looks like an Arab. I mean, that's exactly what you want to happen. You look like an Arab when you put on your talit. And it's so obvious that the covering is from the bottom up, and not from the top down, that everybody does it incorrectly. Again, I think the difference developed in countries where they knew how the Arabs covered themselves versus in countries where they had no idea how Arabs wore the covering. All the Sfaradim do it exactly the way the Rav Avadia Yosef describes over here. Clear that their practice was based on the way the Arabic headdresses looked. And he brings other proofs from the Midrashim that the wrappings around the neck. It's a compelling, compelling tshuva. I think that it's problematic to do it the other way because it's clearly not atifat ha'ishmeilim. There are those that try to defend the practice. Some of the later achronim, they tried to defend the practice and say that in sandy places that the Arabs would cover over their faces, even with the screens, equivalent to the burqas today with those women that have a thin veil over their face and they used to cover even their faces to block out the sand. To me, that's really trying to melamed zchut and really trying hard to get by this. It's so clear that the practice is wrong of covering from the top down. Problem came about because it says you have to cover until your mouth or until your nose. They misunderstood it being from the top down versus from the bottom up. And it's so clear, you walk around in Israel, you know exactly what they're talking about. You see any Arab is wearing a headscarf, that's exactly how they cover their face. And that's the Atifat HaYishmaelim. Again, it's so compelling, I'll send out the truth from Radio Safe, but if one has the practice, they might want to change and put on their talus in the proper way, which is Atifat HaYishmaelim, when you make the bracha. I mean, otherwise it might be a problem of a bracha levatala, because you never end up doing Atifat then. Because your atifah is done the wrong way. So this Gemara has implications, strong implications, not just by Beilut, but has implications by the wearing of a talit, which is a daily activity where we make a bracha of the itatef by tzitzit. Because Shmuel says here, ein atifah, elik atifah tishmelim. Shmuel defines the word atifah as being there's only one type of atifah. Just like it says tearing. There's only one type of tearing, that's when there's emotion involved. If there's no emotion in the heat of the moment, that's not called tearing. If you tear any other time, it's meaningless. So do over here. He says the definition of the word atifah is atifat ha'ishmeilim. There is no such thing as atifah unless you do it like the atifat ha'ishmeilim. So if by tzitzit you demand lehita tape by tzitzit, you require atifah, the definition of atifah is atifat ha'ishmeilim. Just like here by Avel, he says atifah means atifat ha'ishmeilim. He equates the two. They're synonymous. So too by the wearing of a talit. I mentioned this earlier in Masechta and I said I think it was incorrect. Is that there's some of the achronim that say that we still practice atifat harosh, even though the practice has gone by the wayside. There are some sfaradim that still keep the atifat harosh. Sfaradim avelim do this atifat harosh. But in general, the practice has fallen by the wayside. Again, that was more towards the Ashkenazi side. The Beit Yosef doesn't say anything about not doing atifat harosh. The Ashkenazi, the Ramah, all bring down that the minhag was not to, because clearly the differential between the countries in which the Beit Yosef lived in with that atifat harosh was not considered to be something unusual. Versus in Europe, where it was considered to be something that was extraordinary, out of the ordinary. So there, some of the achronim, after the Ramah, disagree with the Ramah and say, why can't we keep the minhag? Just pull down your hat a little further down on your head. They say that, just pull your hat down and it'll cover your eyes and it'll cover down your nose. They're clearly viewing this atifat ha'ishmeilim in the same way, which is from the top down to the nose. And that's why I think it doesn't make any sense, what they're saying. They're continuing, or they are perpetuating the misunderstanding of atifat ha'ishmeilim and saying that you can pull your hat down and that'll be a covering of your face. That all assumes that the covering is from the top down. If it's from the bottom up, then pulling your hat down really has no relevance in this case. And I think that's why I think that practice is probably mistaken. It's probably the same misunderstanding of atifat ha'rosh. Now, in terms of covering one's head in general, there's two different things. One is covering one's head, one is doing atifat. The Gemara in Kiddushin talks about that Talmid HaChachamim walk around with their head covered. Now, their head cover was probably a hood, you know, more like the Baba Sali type of head covering that you're talking about, not a hat that they wore. But again, the covering of one's head might be independent of this din of atifah, which is the requirement that a person carry themselves in a certain dignified manner and keep their head covered. It also might have to do with the cultural norms. It might have changed in the time of JFK, John F. Kennedy, when he was inaugurated, and he was the first president to be inaugurated without a hat on. So that actually changed the cultural dynamics, because then it became okay to walk outside without a hat on. Before that period in time, it was culturally unacceptable to be outside without a hat on. you walked out, if you went outside, whenever you appeared in public, you had to be wearing a hat, especially in manners of distinction of stature, you had to wear a hat. So therefore, for davening and the same things as well, you would have to wear a hat because that was the cultural norm. Once the cultural norm changed, maybe that din also changed. I'm not saying yes or no, I'm just giving you highlights. This is a larger topic that we're not going to deal with right now, but since you asked, I'm just mentioning the highlights of what the issues are that have to be discussed here, which is the requirement to cover one's head, a double covering that the poskim speak about in one's head when they go to daven, not a single covering over their head. This idea that you have to prepare to come into daven to Hashem, they have to present yourself in a certain manner. And again, the changes, the dynamics of the cultural norms, all of which impact on these issues. And the discussion is much broader, giving you quick highlights about it. Amar Rabbi Yaakov, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Lo shanu ela she'ein lo menalayim biraglav. That's only true if he doesn't have shoes on his feet. Aval yesh lo menalayim biraglav, menalav mochachim alav. He's wearing shoes, then his shoes undermine that position. So what's very interesting here is that if you have only parts of the nihuge avelut, what the Gemara is saying here is that it's not a problem. If you're wearing shoes, you're clearly not an avel, because an avel doesn't wear shoes. So if you're wearing shoes, then you can be matef frosho, then you can cover your head. You can cover your head because wearing shoes is an indication that you're not an avel. Now for Shmuel, that may not be true. Because by Shmuel, the atifah is so particular to being an avel that maybe that's not true. But for Rav, this would definitely be true, which is that if you're wearing shoes, then doing atifah is clearly not problematic. Because since you are wearing shoes, you're clearly not an avel, and you don't have to worry about it. Tosafot asks the question over here, why does the Gemara only mention minalayim, shoes? Why isn't it there all the other things? Maybe if you leave your head uncovered, why then can you not wear shoes? Because if you leave your head uncovered, that's an indication you're not an avel. So he says it's a possibility over here that the shoes are more mochiach. It's something that is public. It is something that is very obvious or something that was very associated with avelut. So that's one possibility that Tosafot describes over here. You might remember anybody who has European grandparents. They were extremely makpid that people did not walk around without shoes. Ayin hara, that only avelim don't wear shoes. That type of attitude is exactly what Tosafot is describing over here, that shoes are very particular to avelut. And therefore, if you're not wearing shoes, you must be an avel in that case. All right, so that's why Tosafot says maybe it's distinct, but it might be true in general that if you can do certain things that make it obvious you're not an avel, then the other practices are not problematic on Shabbat. There are those that ask the question in terms of atifah on Shabbat. Are you allowed to do atifat ha'ishmeilim on Shabbat when you put on your talit? So there are true votes written about doing atifat ha'ishmeilim on Shabbat because that's minhag avilut. Maybe you shouldn't do it on Shabbat. Most of the poskim say it's not a problem, in order, because we only put it on temporarily, just quickly to do the atifah. You're not wearing it around like an avel. You're not intending to be an avel in that case. So therefore, most don't think it's a problem to put it, that you have to put on your talit differently. There are some that believe that you have to put on your talis differently on Shabbat. And when you pull it across your face, don't cover up to your nose, just keep it under your chin. Because that would be the difference between an avel, doing atifah as an avel and not as an avel. But in general, I think we're not choshesh for that problem on Shabbat. Since you asked the question, which is that here it says nalayim, and the definition of nalayim are leather shoes. And today we have just as comfortable non-leather shoes as we have leather shoes. So there is Shlomo Zalman mentions this, I think there are others before him that mention it, that what is unique about leather that makes it particular that you can't wear leather shoes. And that is because leather comes from the animal, and wearing leather shoes or wearing leather means that a person is standing on the leather. That's an indication of man's dominion over the animal kingdom and man's dominion in general. So in times where a person is either in a veil or times like Yom HaKippurim, where we are trying to defer, we're trying to diminish our dominion and defer to the dominion of God, in those times not wearing leather shoes is the siman that we want to give. Instead of us being dominant over the animal kingdom, we're saying, no, we're not dominant anymore. We're little guys. We are subordinating ourselves to Hashem. And that would be particular to leather shoes and not man-made type of materials that are today. So it may not be particularly about the shoes themselves, but the fact that the shoes symbolize this idea that you're walking on top of leather. And that has a sign of dominion, of man's conquering of the world. And in these situations, we're trying to diminish that. And that may be the distinction between leather shoes and non-leather shoes, which has nothing to do with comfort. There is an aspect of comfort, and there are poskim that want to suggest that when it comes to these items, that one should try to do something that makes them a little more uncomfortable and not try to wear the most comfortable type of shoes that is possible today, even without leather. So there is a midat chasidut in that way, but Mi'ikar locha, the din might be by leather, because of the reason that we just spoke about. Any tearing that is not done at the time of emotion, the time of the heat of the moment, enu kera. Then we say before that nachnaf she derav, so that Rav had passed away. Kara ale treis armane. He ripped 12 pieces of clothing on that. Amar azal gavro dahavda mistafina mine. The one person who I was afraid of, the one person I was afraid who asked me a question, he passed away. I mean that he saw in the loss of Rav, he's somebody who could really keep him in check, someone that was above him in a sense, and that loss affected him so much. But he ripped 12 times. How could you claim that the 12 times is emotional? Once, maybe twice, that's emotional. But to rip 12 times already, that's a siman of the tsar, but it's not the shat achimum. Another story similar to this was said to Rabbi Yochanan when Rabbi Chanina passed away. He ripped over there 13 cloaks of milta, of silk or fine wool. Again, he says, that's the one person I was afraid of. That was the one person I was scared if he asked me a question. Someone who kept me in check, he's gone now. But you see here that the Chachamim are ripping multiple times. You can't claim that's all b'shat chimum. So shiny Rabbanon. The Rabbanon are different. Came into Choshaita Madkrei Shmatayu Kishat Chimum Domi. Because every time they remember the memory of the individual, it becomes like shat chimum. It resurrects the emotions of the moment, because every time they say something over in that person's name, every time they remember a question that person says, it reminds them of that problem or that loss, and therefore it's like it reawakens the emotions. It's like making it's like a raw nerve that you touch. Every time you mention it, it conjures up the emotions and the heat of the moment, and that's why they rip then. So that's how the Gemara answers for that. This Gemara back, if you remember the Gemara in Brachot, it talks about the Talmidim of Rav that had torn Kriya over the loss of Rav, and then they're on their way back home from the Shiva or the burial of Rav, and they're along the river, and they sit down and they forget Halacha that has to do with Zimun. And then they turn their clothing around and they rip a second time at that point over the fact that they can't remember. Now that Rav's gone, they forgot a memory of Rav, they forgot the Torah of Rav, and then they see a secondary loss there. Similar to what the Gemara is describing over here, that there's a loss, which is the physical loss of the individual, the emotional loss, but there's a secondary part of the loss, which is the Torah of that individual now is lost forever. And that's why they ripped the second Kriya, and that's what's being described here by the Gemara, about Talmidei Chachamim, they rip every time they think of the memra of the individual. So Amalei Ravin Barada the Rova, Amar Talmid Chol Rav Amram, Ravin Barada says to Rova, your Talmid Rav Amram says, Tanya, we have a Braita. Avel Kol Shiva Kor Olifanav. Any one of the 7 days of Shiva, the tear of the clothing must be in front, meaning it must be publicly displayed. When you do the rip, you can't hide the rip. The rip has to be in front so everybody can see that your clothing is rent. V'im ba lachlif, machlif. If he wants to change his clothing, he can change his clothing. V'koreya. But every time he changes his clothing, he has to rip the new garment so that there is a rip in the garment. B'shabbat, korola achurav. This we saw before from Shmuel. On Shabbat, you move the kara, you move the rip to behind you, because you're not allowed to display avilut on Shabbat in public. On Shabbat, if you change your clothing, then it's permissible to change your clothing. You just don't have to rip it then, because on Shabbat, there's no necessity to have a rip in the clothing. So here you see that every time you put on a piece of clothing, you're ripping it. That's definitely not Shat Chimum. Shat Chimum was at the time of the death. Here you're doing the whole Shiva, he's ripping the clothing. That's made about for the honor of his parents. This is the Gemara says, it's just an issue of kavod, it's not an issue of kriya. The reason that it's kavod of bivimo is that you display the kriya. You display the rip, and that's why you have the rip in front. So if you put on a new piece of clothing, it would not be respect for your parents, because it would look like you never ripped your clothing over the loss of your parents. So it's really a marat ayin issue. It's an issue that when people come in, they see that your clothes are ripped, so that they know that you tore over your parents. I mean, that's kavod of bivimo. How could it be possible that someone would hear about the death of their parents and they wouldn't rip their clothing? Some of the Rishonim take that even past by Shmua Rechoka. When you get a Shmua Rechoka, do you have to rip your clothing for parents? The Gemara said before, B'chod Aviv V'imo. So there was Machloket Rishonim earlier, a couple of daf ago, about whether that means that you rip a Kriya when it comes to Shmua Rechoka for parents. They bring Rabbi Chia as an example where he heard about his parents possibly. It depends what you think, who passed away. Was it Rav's parents or Rav's grandparents that passed away, whether it was Rabbi Chia's parents or his brother and sister? But over there, Rabbi Chia did not rip his clothing. He only kept mixes ayom kekula because of the Shmua Rechoka, and he didn't rip his clothing. So depending on what you think the story there, that has proof in either direction. But the poskim over there argue about this. The Ravid, again, I said before, has the most extreme view, which is that shat chimum literally means shat chimum. If it's not an emotional time, you don't rip your clothing. He says, if you have a shmor rechoka, there's no reason to rip your clothing. There is no, quote-unquote, shat chimum. Shat chimum is at the moment of death. You're way past that. You're outside that realm. Others, like the Ramban, believe that you always rip. No matter how long afterwards that you hear about it, you rip your clothing. It's called kvod aviv imo, which means it would be inconceivable that a person could hear that his parents passed away and he doesn't rip his clothing. I mean, that should be the natural recurrence. That's what it means, kvod aviv imo. Kibud avim dictates that one would rip their clothing when they hear such news, with such terrible news. That's what the Gemara is saying over here, that it's inconceivable that someone would walk around without a rip in their clothing because of kvod aviv imo. How could it be that you don't have clothing that's ripped if your parents passed away? Tosafot over here, as Fred, this is based on your question before. Wait a minute, we saw before they were ripping here, ripping there. What's going on? So here it says, Kitanya bi kvod aviv imo, and it says, the mari bikai gavda the machli the korea, ta gavi aviv imo amar hocha machli for korea kol shiva. Over here, in our Gemara, it says you only have to rip for the 7 days. Back in the Gemara before, it says that you rip forever on your parents. And that's again, the Ravid says you're right. You don't rip forever. You rip during Shiva and that's it. But otherwise, no. Others say, no, you rip forever. But how is it possible that you could be ripping and it's not Shat Chimum? So he says that it's similar to what we just said about the Chachamim over here. Yirad Adam Amar Le'el, Mishnez Damin Lo Chaluk B'toch Shiva. Someone all of a sudden gets a piece of clothing during the Shiva. He was either wearing someone else's clothing. He didn't have a shirt when he first got the news, so he didn't rip. All of a sudden, now he gets a shirt in the middle of Shiva. Afal pi she'enu shat chimum, why does he have to rip it? Shema dafka kagon shekara kvar. One answer, he says, is maybe he only ripped already. He did a kriya already, and now this is just doing a kriya to show that he did kriya before. But not that this would be the first time he does kriya, otherwise there's no kriya here. Inami, kagon she'enu chaluk b'shat rishona, chayav dikra she'elo, afilu shalo shat chinum. Why? V'nil nira d'b'chol shash yuchal l'itchamei mal meito. Anytime he can re-experience the emotional moment, afilu mizman ruba achar mitato korei shapir b'shat chinum. So Tosafot goes the polar opposite of the Ravid. The Ravid says shat chinum is only at the moment of death. Tosafot says that as long as you can reach that same emotional state, anytime you can reach that emotional state, that's called shat chinum. Shat chinum doesn't literally mean with death, like the Chachamim over here. Every time they remembered the memra of their peers, then they got upset about it and they rent their garments. They ripped their clothing over it. So too, over here, we say the same thing, which is, at any time you can have that same feeling, you can reach that feeling. If it's in the middle of the Shiva, you get your clothing. And then you remember the death and you can get that emotional feeling again, you rip then, and that's called Shat Chimom. Maybe when you hear about a parent, many years later, if that's the first time you heard about it, that's Shat Chimom, you can rip over there. So Tosfot's very expansive in his view of what Shat Chimom is. Shat Chimom means if as long as you can reach that emotional state, even though it's not literally at the time of the emotion, the time of the death, that's called Shat Chimom. The Ravid's just the opposite. The Ravid says Shat Chimum literally means at the moment of death. Otherwise, it's not called a Kriya. And so here you see the different sides of it, and that Tosafot is answering your question as to why we have all these different types of rips. And now the Gemara says, when it comes to these tears that you rip, the tears that you're ripping for Kavod, the original tear that you ripped for Kavod Aviv Imo, we said before in the Gemara, Ein Mitachim, you can never stitch it up. It's a permanent tear. It can never be rectified. But what happens to these extra rips that you do that are only because of kvod aviv imo or because you put on a new piece of clothing, you have to rip it? Are you allowed to restitch those? Because they were not done because of the emotions and the moment, the rip for your parents. They're done because you don't want a mayor dying. So are they allowed to be stitched up? And that's the Gemara's question over here. Otan krayin, mitachin or in mitachin? These rips that you do, the kvod aviv imo or to show other people that you have a rip in your clothing, can they be stitched up? Pligi ba avud rabo shayo bar kaporo, machloket amuraim, chad amar ein mitachin, one says you do not stitch it up, chad amar mitachin, one says you do stitch it up. Tistayim davua de rabi oshaya, damar ein mitachin. Let's conclude that the father of rabo shayo is the one who says that you cannot stitch it up, the amar rabo shayo. We have a memra from rabo shayo, ein mitachin. He says that you're not allowed to stitch it up. Miman shmielai. Who did he hear it from? He must have obviously heard it from his father. So therefore, lab mi'avua, he heard it from his father, so therefore his father is the baal of that opinion. The Gemara says, lo, mi bar kapara rabbe, just me alayz. Bar kapara is his rebbe, yeah. Avua the Rabbi Oshaya is his father, but he also is bar kapara is his rebbe. So who says he heard it from his father? He might have heard it from his rebbe. So therefore you don't have any proof as to the attribution of whose opinion is which over here. Amarava, avel mitayel be'unkuli b'toch beito. An avel can go around in his uncle in his house. Rashi over here says Unkle is a shaipins chaluk shikoro. It's a like tunic that is ripped. This might be on Shabbat that he can walk around with the ripped clothing in his house because it's not obvious that he's an avel. He's inside his house. He's wearing this little ripped tunic. Maybe that's fine. It's interesting that he translates Unkle here. If you look at the Gemara in the end of Minachot over there, the Gemara talks about the problem with Beit Chonyo, which there was a machloket about who was going to be the Kohen Gadol, Shimi or Chonyo. And then Shimi sets up his brother Chonyo to be a laughing stock, and he tells him to put on this unkle. Rashi over there says it's Beit Or, that it was a leather piece of clothing. It was like a Tarzan outfit of sorts. And then he tells him to go work as the Kohen Gadol, and then he sets him up to make fun of him and say, look what this guy is doing. He's wearing his wife's clothing and going out to be the Kohen Gadol. But unkle over there seems to be more like a piece of clothing that's worn inside the house, which is not as extensive as something that you wear outside the house. But here it's ripped. You can wear it inside the house because it's inside the house. Abaye Ashkehe the Rav Yosef, the Paris Le Sudra Reshe. Rav Yosef had his head covered. He was walking around his house. Don't you hold with the fact that there's no Evilut in Shabbat? Anything that is in private, you are no Heg. Again, here, Tosafot said this in yesterday's daf. Here you see it more explicitly. In your house is called Bitsina. The practices in your house are called Bitsina. It's a question whether Bitsina means really private, where nobody can tell, or Bitsina just means that inside your house, where you're not in the public thoroughfare. Over here, the Gemara seems to leaning heavily towards the fact that Davarish Bitsina means inside your house. So as long as it's inside your house, that's not called a public display of Avedut. Obviously, Rav Yosef over here must be covering his head in a way that is not like Shmuel, meaning that if he thinks that Shmuel is right about the covering of your face, then even inside of his house, if he was doing Atifat HaYishmaelim, it wouldn't matter because only Avelim do that. But it's possible over here that Rav Yosef is covering, pulled it off his face, moved it down off his mouth, and he kept his head covered, and therefore it was like Rav, and that's why he continued to wear it inside of his house, because it wasn't Muchach that he was an Avel, and since it's inside of his house, he can keep Dvarim Sheh Bitsina. Alright, now, Rabbi Elazar Omer, Mishchara Beit HaMikdash Atzeret Kishabbat. Once the Beit HaMikdash destroyed Atzeret now, which is a one-day holiday, has the same din as Shabbat. I'm Rav Gidol Bar Menashe, Mishmo Locha Ki Rabban Gamliel. The Locha is like Rabban Gamliel, who says that Rosh Hashanah and Yom HaKippurim have a din like a regel, and Kol Shekein, you would say the same thing by Atzeret. V'ikad Amat Nilahad Rav Gidol Bar Menashe, Aha! Kol Lamed Yom Tinok Yotzei B'cheik. For the first 30 days, a young child goes out b'cheik, meaning they don't take him out with the normal trappings of a funeral, that within the first 30 days, since it's only a baby, they take him out, they carry him out, literally. V'nikvar b'isha achad v'shnei anashim. He's buried with one woman and two men, so there's no problem of yichud. Two men and one woman are not a problem of yichud, and he can be taken out in a small private ceremony. V'lo b'isha achad v'shnei anashim. You're not allowed to do it with one man and two women, because then there's a risk of yichud, there's a risk of impropriety in that case. Even with one man and two women, it's allowed, because he says that the Tosafot mentions over here, the tree does shari. Because at the time of Eilut, people don't think about the acts of impropriety, and therefore it would be okay in this case. We don't worry about Yichud. It's very interesting, given the Gemara on Sukkah Daf Nun Bet. The Gemara on Sukkah Daf Nun Bet learns out the source for Mechitza from the Hesped of Mashiach ben Yosef. And the Gemara there says, Ma b'shat hesped, at a time that people are crying and people are upset. There the Gemara requires mechitza, the Torah requires mechitza, hachat kam v'kam b'shat simcha. So you see over there that the Gemara says that even by a funeral you need a mechitza, because we say they have to be separate. But worry about this impropriety even in times of negative emotions, times of being distraught. So here the Gemara seems, at least the way Tosfot is describing it, to go against that position in the Gemara and Sukkah. Might be different that here it's to deal with a young child and it's the parents or the family of the child versus over there, Mashiach ben Yosef was a leader of the people in general. So maybe over there the motions are different and we could distinguish between the cases, but it's interesting that Tosafot makes that distinction over here. And we don't do a shura. Rashi over here says, ein tzarich. You don't have to do it. Although it seems to be that the practice was they did not seem ein omdim ala bishura. People don't stand in a line. You don't say the normal birkat avilim, which we'll get to in the Gemara in Ketubot. And you don't have tanchume avilim, meaning that people don't go to the house to visit during Shiva. If you have a child that's lost within the first 30 days, you don't go and pay a Shiva call. Ben Shloshim, if he's already Ben Shloshim, you'll say b'dluskema. Then he goes out in this, call it a basket of some sort. Rabbi Yehuda lo dluskema nitelet v'kateif. Not a tluskma that's carried on one's shoulders, ela nitele bagafayim, that's carried by his hips, by his hands. So it's not the full honors of a funeral, but it's a smaller type of carrying of the mate. Here you do have a shura for him, because he's already not in Nafel anymore. He's over the 30-day period. You have Birkat Avilim, Tanchumei Avilim. Bet Yud Bat Chodesh is already 12 months old. Then Yotze B'mita. Then he goes out with a full funeral rites. Rabbi Kiva Omer, U Ben Shana, Ve'virav Kebet Shtayim. If he's 1 year old and his body is the size of a 2 year old, U Ben Shtayim, Ve'virav Kebet Shana, or if he's 2 years old and his body's like a 1 year old, Yotze B'mita. Then he goes out. So Rabbi Akiva seems to indicate that maturity or physical maturity also has an impact over here. And also Rabbi Akiva seems to be arguing that it has to be a full year and not just 12 months. Not 12 months, but a full year. That obviously has a difference between a leap year or a lunar year. 1 year is the threshold, as well as the fact that it might be that he thinks that you have to actually go into the next year. When you say Yom Shloshim is Kishloshim or no Kishloshim, Gemara says, well, Bavelut is the Hakel, so that Yom Shloshim is like before Shloshim. The same thing over here. Maybe Rabbi Akiva believes that the end of the year is not enough. You have to be a year and a day in order for it to be qualified as a year, because the last day would be counted towards the previous year. Or maybe it just means that the threshold is 2 years old, and that 2 years old can be accomplished either by actual age or physical maturity. Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar Omer, Ayotze b'mita, Rabbi Matzivim Alav. As soon as someone is brought on a mita, has full funeral lights, then people should cry and be upset over it. Matzivim Panav is something like Tzahov Panav, Tzavu Panehem. Tzavu Panehem means that they're upset, they're distraught, they're overcome by emotion. He's not carried out the way in Rabbi Matzivin Alav. Then people don't cry, people don't get worked up about this. So that means that anybody who's under the 12 months would not get this funeral rites, would not have people get upset over them. Only if the child is well known to the public, meaning that it's already a child who leaves the house, is out there, people are well versed or know him because he's part of the public domain now. He attends shul, he goes to places that people would recognize him. Then Rabbi Mitaskimbo, then they get involved in this full funeral rites, and there's paying shivakal. Ain't only Kal Rabim in Rabbi Mitaskimbo. If people don't know him, meaning that he's a child that's still in the house, hasn't left the house yet, then Rabbi made Mitaskimbo. He's giving a different definition. He has a different threshold. His threshold is whether this would be even, it would probably not be 3, 4, 5 before he leaves the house. So he has a different threshold whatsoever. Ma'in Behespeid. What's the din of Hespeid by a katan? Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Shmuel Omer, Aniyim b'nei Shalosh. That by the poor people, once the child reaches 3 years old, you give them a hesped, or shirim b'nei chamesh. For the wealthy people, then after 5, Rashi over here says the difference between the poor and the wealthy is that the poor person only has his children. Therefore, the loss of a child is much more dramatic and distressing to the poor person. The rich person still has his simcha in other places, since he has other things that make him happy. So therefore, until the child is older, we don't have him say a hesped. Yudomer mishmo, aniyim b'nei chamesh, aniyim are actually 5 years old. Ashrim b'nei sheish, and ashrim are only when they reach 6 years old. B'nei snekeinim k'bnei aniyim. And a ben zkunim, for an individual, has a din like b'nei aniyim, by some of the Rishonim described over here, is because he takes care of his elderly parent. So therefore, the parent is very reliant upon that young child, like the aniyim, where the child means everything, and the loss of the child is much more significant. Right, so now, Amar Rav Gidol bar Menashe, Amar Rav, Alocha k'Rabbi Yehuda, the Alocha here is like Rabbi Yehuda, Shemar Mishum Rabbi Yishmael, in the name of Rabbi Yishmael, who said over here that the threshold is a much higher threshold in terms of hesped. Right now, what is interesting over here, is you have to give some social background to this, which is that today, nobody would ever imagine not giving a child full funeral rites, even the child was a young child. Today, everybody who passes away, they do a full funeral, you have a shiva, and people come in menachem, the avelim. So what's different? The difference has to be with what's happening in the social framework of society at that time. Today, thank God, infant mortality is something that's very low, especially in developed countries. And therefore, the loss of a child is as significant as the loss of an adult. In the time of, even in the Middle Ages, but especially in the time of the Gemara, where infant mortality is somewhere between 50 and 70%, then the loss of a child is not, quote unquote, as significant. I mean, I hate to say it that way, but it's true. I mean, that everybody would be avelim, they'd be in almost a permanent state of avelut, because children were dying left and right. I mean, that the survival rates of children are so low. But if you get infant mortality, even make it past the age of 5 or 10, was something that was unusual. And therefore, if everybody kept, it was a death, and everybody had avelut, it would be something that was overwhelming. And again, I think the emotions are mitigated because of that. If everybody's dying and there's only a percentage that will survive, that's the way that people expect to happen. Not that they wanted to die, but it's something that was not as unusual as we might think of it today. And therefore you have to look at this Gemara in the context, or in that context, which is that these deaths are not as significant. The way the Ramban terms it in Torat Adam, he says that people have a tendency to gravitate towards simcha. People want to be happy in life. People want to enjoy. People don't want to always be in the, under a dark cloud and be avelut. And so therefore, he says, that's why the locha is the hakel here. He says that maybe in all these cases that we say the locha is the hakel is because people don't want to be caught up in this darkness, this black cloud, and this avelut. Especially when there's only a safek whether this child or this baby will survive. They never really get fully emotionally attached because of that. Because it would just overwhelm them. It would just become their whole life would be covered by a dark cloud. And that's not what we want. People want to gravitate towards simcha. The Chachamim recognize that. And that's why they are makil in these cases and say that people don't have to be avilim in these situations. Because it was just too much. It wasn't something that was practical. It wasn't something that resonated with human emotion. That's important because we spoke about this before, that avilut might actually derive from the fact that there are no rules of avilut, because avilut is a natural process. It's a natural process of grieving. There are natural emotions that come up when a person has a loss. And therefore, avilut is not as well defined because it's a natural part of human cycle. It's a natural part of the way humans react to loss. But over here, if that's the way that people are reacting to it, Chazal recognized that avilut in those situations wasn't as important because it wasn't what the human emotion was dictating in those places. Again, today, I think that a lot of these halachot would fall by the wayside. Now, if you are halachist, like a pure halachist, then you would say, oh, you don't have avelut, you don't have all these things, you don't have a shura for these young children. So that would be the way that you would govern in the day today. But those that recognize that the times have changed and the loss of a child is so significant today, then we do treat them differently than they did in the Chazal, and then the minhagei avelut should actually change in those situations. So again, it's important to understand the social context in which this is being said, because it does make a difference today, where maybe the social context is not the same as it was in the time of the Gemara, and even the time of the Middle Ages. Right now, the Gemara continues and says, Dorosh Ravanani bar Sason, a pitcha de benisiyo, that he was Doresh on the doorway of the Nasi's house, Yom Echad lifnei Atzeret, Vatzeret Hari Kanar Basar. If the person has a mate that is buried on Erev Shavuot, then Erev Shavuot counts as 7 days, and Shavuot itself counts as 7 days. Because he has Avelut Shiva. Avelut Shiva is going to be cut off by Shavuot. So since his Avelut is cut off, that counts like 7 days. It's if he kept 7 days of Avelut. So the cutting off, that's the 7 days of Erev Yom Tov. Erev Yom Tov counts as 7 days. Shavuot itself has a din like 7 days. Because it's a regel. The Yom Tov has a din like a regel. And therefore, 7 days as well. So now he has 14 days counting towards his shloshim. By the time he's on Motzei Shavuot, he's already down 14 days of his shloshim. Shama Rabbi Ami heard this, vikpud, and he was upset. He said, that's not right. Amar atu didehu, is that really his memra? The Rabbi Elozer, Amar Rabbi Oshayai. He didn't make this up. He quoted as if this is his memra. It's not his own memra. That's the memra of Rabbi Elozer, Amar Rabbi Oshayai. And now a similar story, Dorash Rabbi Yitzchak Nafka, Kilo Derech Galuta. Rabbi Yitzchak Nafka gave a drusha on the exilarch's porch. Yom Echad Lifnei Atzeret, Ve'atzeret. You take the day before Shavuot, and the Shavuot itself, Erikan Arbasar. Shama Rav Sheshet. Rav Sheshet heard, Ikpad. He was upset about that. Because Rabbi Elazar Mashiach says, Minayin La'atzeret Sheish La Tashlumim Kol Shiva. How do you know that at Seret Shavuot has Tashlumim for 7 days? Shneamar, b'chag haMatzot, u'b'chag haShavuot, u'b'chag haSukkot. Ma chag haMatzot yesh la Tashlumim kol Shiva, just like by Pesach, if you don't bring your Shlamei Simcha, you don't bring your Shlamim and your Olot Riyah on the first day, you can make it up for the subsequent days, meaning the 6 days afterwards, for a total of 7 days. Av chag Shavuot yesh la Tashlumim kol Shiva. So too by Shavuot, you have a 7 day period, meaning including Shavuot, 6 days beyond Shavuot. So therefore you see, what's the reason that Atzeret, what's the reason that Shavuot counts for 7 days? It's because it has Tashlumim called Shiva, because it's just like Pesach. Not only is the day itself a day of Yom Tov, the Yom Tov has impact on these days afterwards. So even though it's a 1 day holiday, the subsequent days are mushpa, are influenced by the holiday itself, And therefore it becomes like as if it is a 7-day holiday, just like by Pesach and just like by Sukkot. Even though there are 7-day holidays literally, nevertheless, they count as 7 days because the first day is Yom Tov and then the backup days are 7 days. Now what's interesting here by Shavuot is that it actually turns out that you double count. As opposed to by the other holidays, like say by Pesach. If you had the same scenario by Pesach and someone had a mate that was Nikvar on Erev Pesach, then the Erev Pesach would count as 7 days because you cut off Shiva. Then Pesach itself would count as 7 days, that's 14 days, and then you continue counting afterwards. Right, so that's 14 days because you actually lived through 7 days of Pesach. Over here by Etzeret, what actually happens is that on Erev Shavuot, you count 7 days for Avilut. Shavuot itself counts as 7 days. And then the subsequent 6 days, you're going to continue counting towards your Shloshim. So that might have to do with why we count the days. And that has to do with what we spoke about before, that Shloshim and Chol HaMoed have very similar dinim. So since they have very similar dinim, why are you keeping the restrictions? So by Pesach and by Sukkot, why are you keeping the restrictions on Chol HaMoed? You're keeping those restrictions because it's Chol HaMoed, not because it's Shloshim. So because of that, you can't count those days towards the Shloshim. On the other hand, by Shavuot, why are you keeping the Nehige Shloshim after Shavuot? It's not because it's Chol HaMoed, it's because it's the Avelut Shloshim. So that might be why Shavuot you get to double count the days as opposed to by Sukkot and Pesach. Because it might be what's driving the change in your behavior. Is it driving the change in your behavior? Chol HaMoed? So then it shouldn't count towards your 30 days. If it's the Shloshim that's driving, like by Shavuot, then you get to double count the days. So that might be the distinction between Shavuot and the other holidays. Adabre Rapapa of Av Yisabo. So Rapapa brought in front of or had led Rabbi Yisabo with Dorash. He was Dorash. Yom Echad Lifnei Rosh Hashanah. Rosh Hashanah Yekan Arbasar. The day before Rosh Hashanah and Rosh Hashanah itself count for 14 days. Wow, why is that? Because we paskin, it seems like Rabban Gamliel. That means on Erev Rosh Hashanah, if you started Avelut Shiv'ah, then you cut off the Shiva. That's 7 days. Rosh Hashanah, like Atzeret, like Shavuot, is like a regel. And therefore you count 7 days as well. So now you get 14 days out of Rosh Hashanah. From the Amar Ravino Yokak, from that you conclude, Yom Echad Lifnei Achag, V'chag B'Shmini Shalor Eikan Esrim V'Echad Yom. If you're talking about Sukkot, by Sukkot, if you have the Niftar happen on Erev Sukkot, that means that you cut off Shiva on Erev Sukkot, that's 7 days. Sukkot itself is 7 days. Shmini Atzeret is Rego B'Fnei Atzmo. That's another 7 days. That's 21 days that get knocked out of the Shloshim from Sukkot. Ravina Iklo L'Sura D'Prat. Ravina went to Sura D'Prat Amalei Rav Chaviva Misura D'Prat L'Ravina. He said to him, Amar Mar, Yom Echad Lifnei Rosh Hashanah V'Rosh Hashanah Eikan Arbasar. Did you say that the day before Rosh Hashanah leads you to have 14 days knocked out of your Shloshim? Amalei Anam Istavrak Rabbi Gamliel Huda Amina. I must have said it in the name of Rabbi Gamliel, meaning we're going to get to it in a second. The Rishonim interpret this differently, but he seems to say that I'm saying this in Shita Rabbi Gamliel. Rabbi Gamliel says that Rosh Hashanah is Kirigalim, and if you take him at face value, if Rosh Hashanah is Kirigalim, that means that you get 14 days out of Rosh Hashanah, like you do out of Shavuot. So now, Tosafot asked the question, all the Rishonim asked the question here, who needs Rosh Hashanah to be 14 days? Why do you need Rosh Hashanah to be 14 days? Let's think about this. According to Rabbi Gamliel, Rosh Hashanah is a regel. And so is Yom Kippur. It's also a regel. Well, if the Niftar passed away on Erev Rosh Hashanah, then Shiva's cut off by Rosh Hashanah. Shloshim is going to get cut off by Yom HaKippurim. So who cares if Rosh Hashanah is 14 days long? The Shloshim is going to get cut off by Yom Kippur. You're not going to end up counting Shloshim anyway. So why does it matter that Rosh Hashanah is 14 days long? So the Rishonim have different answers to this question, numerous answers that are given. The Tosafot mentions a number of them, so I'm just going to go through them quickly, the different answers given by the Rishonim. One of the answers is that the Nafka Mina here is whether he shaved on your Erev Yom Kippur or he didn't shave on Erev Yom Kippur. Do you remember earlier there was a machloket in the Gemara that once you get the dispensation to cut off Shloshim for the Regel, for Kovod HaRegel, that only if you took advantage of that prior to the Regel were you allowed to then to continue shaving afterwards? But if you didn't take advantage of it, then, since there's no stira between Shloshim and the Regel, then afterwards you can't do it because Kovod HaRegel does not apply. The only dispensation you had was for Kovod HaRegel. Therefore, if you shaved before the Regel or you cut your hair before the Regel, you can continue to cut afterwards. If you didn't do it before the Regel, the dispensation dissipates and you can now do it afterwards. So what the Tosafot says is that's the Nafka Mina over here. The Nafka Mina between the two Shitot is that, yes, Yom Kippur will cut off Shloshim, But only if you do something on Erev Yom Kippur. If you cut your hair on Erev Yom Kippur, then Yom Kippur cuts it off. If you don't cut your hair on Erev Yom Kippur doesn't cut off the Shloshim, and you won't be able to cut your hair until 2 days after Yom Kippur. Because that'll get you the Shloshim, meaning that you have 14 days for Rosh Hashanah, the 7 days in between them, then Yom Kippur itself will be 7 days, and then 2 days afterwards will get you the full 30 days. So you have to wait an extra 2 days in order to cut your hair, because you didn't do it on Erev Yom Kippur. So the difference will be whether you can now, if you cut your hair on Yom Kippur, you can cut it afterwards again, or if you didn't cut Erev Yom Kippur, you have to wait the 2 days afterwards. And that's enough kamina, whether Rosh Hashanah is 14 days. Tell us about rejects this and says that, but that's not the halacha. We pass an halacha that even if he didn't shave before, you can continue to shave afterwards. That once Shloshim is abrogated by the regel, doesn't matter whether you took advantage of that dispensation or not, you're allowed to cut afterwards. So that's not the halacha. That's a nice explanation, but that's not the halacha. So then he brings a second attempt at the answer, and the answer is for Shmua Rechoka. It makes a difference. Because we know before that what's the definition of Shmua Krova and Shmua Rechoka? Shmua Krova means within the first 30 days, and Shmua Rechoka means after 30 days. So the nafkamino here, yeah, even though Yom Kippur cuts off the Shloshim, but in terms of the count of Shloshim for Shmua Rechoka, it'll make a difference that Rosh Hashanah is 14 days. Again, here it does what says, we never heard of such a thing. Who says that when we're talking about Shmua Krova and Shmua Rechoka, who says we're talking about halachic Shloshim? That means when the practices of Shloshim cut out. Shloshim there means literally 30 days. It means 30 days from the time of the news, the time of the niftar. Doesn't mean 30 halachic days, meaning that if you cut off the Shloshim, then it's no longer a Shmua Krova, it's a Shmua Rechoka. No, Shmua Krova and Shmua Rechoka are governed by Shloshim, literally the 30 days. They're not governed by halachic days. So he says, again, that can't be a nafkamina. So then he brings a third nafkamina, which then he thinks is the right one, which is it has to do with the Gemara that we saw yesterday about the way that the people conduct themselves in shul in the first week after, the second week after, the third week. So basically he says that by having Rosh Hashanah be counted as 2 weeks, it accelerates you that the next Shabbat would be your third week. And therefore you can have the practice of the third week, which is you can sit in your place, but you can't speak or socialize like you did normally. So it actually accelerates that process of the Nihugei Avelut and returning to the shul. So the Rosh Hashanah makes a difference. Yeah, you're right. Shloshim will be cut off by Yom Kippur. But in the Shabbat between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, that will be counted as his third week in terms of those Nihugei Avelut. The last answer, Tosfos brings, and this is the answer favored by the Baal Amor, is that you can only cut off one of two of the types here. If Shiva is cut off, then Shloshim cannot be cut off by the Regel. If Shiva was a full Shiva, then the Regel can cut off Shloshim. Their proof is from the fact that before, if you remember in the Mishnah says, if you're Noeg Avilu 3 days before, the Regel cuts off Shiva. If you're Noeg 8 days before the Regel, then the Regel cuts off Shloshim. But you see in the example of the Mishnah that you have to have a full 8 days before. You need a full Shiva. So what they indicate is that if Shiva is cut off by Rosh Hashanah, then Yom Kippur will not cut off Shloshim. Since you did not count a full Shiva, then Shloshim is not cut off by the Regel. You have to keep one of the two of them fully. You have to either keep full Shiva to have the Regel terminate Shloshim, or if the Regel terminates Shiva, then Shloshim is not terminated by the Regel. And they show that from the examples of the Mishnah, as well as here, the Indian of Sukkot. By Sukkot, the Gemara says that it's 21 days. It counts towards 21 days of your Shloshim. Why does it count as 21 days towards your Shloshim? Why don't we say that the first day of Sukkot cuts off the Shiva, and then Shmini Atzeret cuts off the Shloshim, and then you don't have any Shloshim? Why does the Gemara say that it's 21 days? Those that argue on the Baal Amor, like the Ramban in Torah Ta'adam, the Ramban in Torah Ta'adam rejects this explanation and says it's just not true. He says that Shloshim can be cut off by the Regel as well. So, what about this case by Sukkot that they bring as a proof? He says you can only have Shloshim be cut off by a Regel if you were Noeg Shloshim. If you were never Noeg Shloshim, you can't have Shloshim be cut off. That's what the Gemara said before. The Mishnah said you need 8 days because you have to have Nihugei Shloshim. Once you've entered into Shloshim, then the Regel can cut off Shloshim. So therefore, if Rosh Hashanah cuts off Shiva, then you are Noeg Shloshim before Yom Kippur. Yom Kippur can knock off Shloshim. On the other hand, if it's Erev Sukkot, where the Shiva is cut off by Sukkot, then you're never Noeg Shloshim until after the Regel. Because on the Regel, you're Noeg Shloshim, not because of Shloshim, but because of the Regel. And therefore, Shmini Atzeret can't cut off Shloshim because you never started your Shloshim. You never were Noeg Shloshim. And that's why Shmini Atzeret doesn't cut it off, and he disagrees with that answer of the Baal Amor. Now, what's interesting here is the Ritva has a different approach and a very unique approach to Gemara, which is when the question is posed to Rav Enoch as to whether he really said that Rosh Hashanah counts as 14 days, he says, I must hold like Rabban Gamliel. What does he mean, I must hold? Why does he just say, I'm doing this based on Rabban Gamliel? Why does he give this circumspect type of answer? So the Ritva claims that that's exactly what the answer is. The answer of the Gemara, Ravina, is it just doesn't matter. Yes, Rosh Hashanah counts as 14 days, but it has no nafkamina. I must hold like Rabban Gamliel, meaning according to Rabban Gamliel, you're going to lose it anyway because you have Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, it's going to get cut off. So whether Rosh Hashanah is 14 days or not is irrelevant because I must hold like Rabban Gamliel, and that means Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur are the cutoffs. So basically what the Ritva does is turns the question on its head and says, Enoch Hanami, the question is such a good question, that's exactly what Ravina meant. Ravina meant to say that there is no 14 days of Rosh Hashanah because it won't matter. It will be cut off the Shloshim anyway. So you want to say it's 14 days? You don't want to say it's 14 days. It doesn't make a difference because it's going to be cut off by Yom Kippurim. So the Ritva says the question is actually the answer of the Gemara. That's the conclusion according to Ravina. That is, there is no nafkamina that Rosh Hashanah is 14 days, and therefore you don't have to come up with the nafkamina because that's exactly what he's saying. He's saying that Yom Kippur is going to cut Shloshim, and therefore it's irrelevant that Rosh Hashanah is 14 days. Okay, we'll stop over here before the Mishnah on the bottom of Chav Dalet Amud Bet.